Support the fans, by the fans. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. I'm Tim Fuel, joined tonight by one of the most well-known voices in the non-league game. By the power of the internet, via Manchester, but more recently via Belgium, it's FC United. Swampy, welcome back to the show, Swampy.
Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Well, I'm not Dave, because...
He's not Dave, is it?
Well, funnily, you should say that. We were hoping to have Dave Anderson with us, but I think the trip to Manchester took too much out of him at the weekend. You know, they went in there, smash and grab for the FA Vars, and they were back out and through to the final eight of the FA Vars.
Well, indeed, they were, and in all fairness, with that kind of build-up, I thought you were talking about Dave. Fantastic win for them, to be honest. I mean, Earl of a town... Earlham is a football club I know quite well. They've got a couple of players that are ex-FC United in our youth team, and for Church to go all the way up there and beat them 2-0, it was quite an even contest until Charlie Doyle was sent off, RX under-18s captain of FC United, once that happened, it was all Church. So they've got a big game now in the last day, going all the way up to West Auckland again, a team I know a little bit about as well, so it's going to be a tough encounter. But fantastic what Dave's achieved in his first season with Chertsey Town, and I feel like I'm in royalty at the moment, because you're undefeated at home.
Home records are, you know, something we might get onto that a little bit later. But it's nice to be at the top of the table for once after a few seasons of being down the bottom.
I feel like the pauper. I feel like the pauper of the duo. If you'd been the trio, I would have felt even worse.
Well, I mean, you've had your years of riding the crest of the wave, but it's not the best time to be an FC United fan at the moment, is it? It's a bit of a rough season.
It is indeed, yeah. It's been, it's a strange one. We've had, in reality, three managers. I think we've gone through 55 players. We've had three goalkeepers, or is it five goalkeepers even, at the beginning of the season, losing our goalkeeper to injury. And now we're struggling at the bottom of the table with a mountain to climb, in all fairness.
Yeah, a massive game this weekend, though, at home to Guiseley. And they're the team to catch just outside the relegation zone.
Yeah, I mean, we played at Guiseley during the season. And, it was, again, it was a close encounter, but then they ended up with all 3 points, and that's been the story for FC most of the season. Certainly the last 4 or 5 games, we've played some very, very good teams, and it's just those fine margins, you know, when a goal is about to be saved by your goalkeeper and it deflects to the opposite side of the pitch on the 87th minute, and then there's a deliberate handball goes against you so you can maybe get the equaliser. It's one of those things in football. I think when you're at the bottom, the luck doesn't necessarily go with you, but we're there for a reason. Massive game against Guiseley, as you say. And I mean, looking at the stats and looking at the games we've got quite a lot of teams in and around us. But I think if we stay up, we need to win 7 out of the next 12. We certainly need a minimum, I think, of between 46 and 48 points. And to go on a run of that ilk would be pretty much against what everyone would think. But at some stage of the season, perhaps you can have a little bit of luck and you can get that run going, and we can hopefully start with the game against Guiseley. But it will be a tough game, because they're a team that were relegated last season equally, and they won't want to get relegated 2 seasons on the bounce, because it's very tough to come back after things like that. But hopefully we'll see what happens on Saturday, and if we can get that result, I'll be a happy, happy man.
Well, you're always a happy, happy man anyway. You're speaking to me from a pub. You must be very, very happy. But one thing I was going to ask, you know, since you guys formed FC, you know, so much has changed in the world of football. You know, you guys have gone from strength to strength, right? You're maybe hitting a bit of a rocky patch at the moment, but don't we all? But is there any... We're going to talk to Salford City later. We've obviously got the class of 92s behind them, Manchester United links and that. Is there any relationship between FC United and Manchester United nowadays? Is there any olive branch been offered by either side?
I think from a fan perspective, that will always be, regardless what the doubters say, Manchester United fans at heart. Financially, we don't support the football club, or I certainly don't support the football club. And I don't think really there is any love lost between the two football clubs. I mean, in all fairness, they are a country mile away from us, as Salford City are. We've had no real correspondence. I mean, in fairness, in the early days of Salford City, the likes of Gary Neville did come to the club, and ask about fan ownership and look to the model, what they could do possibly with Salford City and building the ground and so on and so forth. But as far as loaning players or anything like that's concerned, I think that's a long, long, long way away. I think if the Glazers, if the Glazer family disappears from Manchester United, I think there could be a relationship. I think while the Glazer family are at Manchester United, as a supporter who walked away because of them, and another 2,000 or 3,000, the same as me, walked away, it'd be very hard to be involved in a football club when the owners of the football club are the reason why you left them in the first place. So at this moment in time, no. But I think perhaps going forward in the future, if the Glazers, as I say, do disappear. And we've seen it, you know, we've seen it with Blackpool, haven't we? Blackpool at the moment, the vast majority of their supporters are watching other clubs, primarily AFC Fylde. And they won't, most of their supporters won't go back until the situation is resolved. It looked like it might be getting resolved in the next few months, hopefully, at Blackpool. And I think the same may be the case with FC. But at this moment in time, no, there's no real olive branches. I mean, we've got one of our ex assistant managers is one of the scouts there, and he comes to FC United on a regular basis, and he still does some commentary and that kind of stuff. But from a player perspective or a club perspective, I think we'll keep our distance for some years to come until hopefully things change at Manchester United, because as you say, football has changed dramatically in the last 14 years, and Salford City are the biggest prime example of that when you consider they were only 5 years ago supporters of between 50 and 100, and look where they are now. So again, the game can change so quickly, but again, it changes primarily, as we know, with money. And when you haven't got a great deal, as we haven't, we've got debt to pay over the next 5 years. We're one of those clubs that might on the surface look like we're very, very successful, but we're struggling just like lots of other football clubs in this world, where we're trying to keep our heads above water, pay salaries that are actually appropriate for the standard of football, opposed to paying ridiculous wages, which we're seeing in the game. As you say, Tim, it has changed dramatically, and I think a lot of cases for the worse, not certainly for the better. And that spiral of coming down into the lower leagues of football, and certainly our standard of football, it's not helping, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I was prompted by the question. It's something that quite often I think about. And we're always talking about, you know, should the clubs at the higher levels create links with other clubs? But yeah, when you hear that Manchester United's payout is something near £20 million to Mourinho and his ex staff, and it just gets you thinking, you know, how much of an impact could that have on clubs that step forward, even clubs in the National League? That would be a massive boost to football, and it just shows the imbalance from the higher levels to the levels that we love.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, it's absolutely astronomical, and I think it's perverse. You know, we live in society where we've got people, living in bedsits, living on the streets, and we've got players earning £400,000 a week. I mean, you know, £400,000 a week. And the thing is, with most of us, they can't spend it because they're athletes, and therefore that money's just sitting in a bank account doing probably not a great deal, or gaining lots of interest for them, suppose. But you're right. I mean, I've been an advocate. I mean, there's fundamentally needs to be a change in football, and the money that is generated at the very, very top, very, very top of the game has never really trickled down. I mean, it has trickled down, and it's a drip. And when I say it's a drip, it might occasionally drip once every 4 or 5 years, where there's a little bit of momentum, but then it disappears again. You know, it becomes a drought again. And I know what you said, and I think to a degree it would be nice that if football clubs of the higher echelons actually could support their local clubs within their area, be it maybe if you're a big team and there's only one or two clubs around you in the divisions, then yes, support them. But with lower league football, it's going to be a massive change. And the problem is that all we can see really is that the massive clubs will disappear to a European Super League at some stage, and then the money will get divided amongst them, and there'll be no money actually in football at all.
Yeah, the interesting thing is you're obviously out in Belgium at the moment, and that's where there have been links with the higher, the bigger clubs, with professional clubs out in Belgium. So it's proved that they like the model. It's just that they don't seem to do it in this country.
Yeah, I mean, there's links up with other clubs. I mean, to be honest, I mean, there's Leuven, who were bottom of the Belgium First Division, First Division B, which is the division that Union Saint-Gilles are in. The King Power, I have a massive association with this King Power Stadium. Nigel Pearson was the manager until last week. He was sacked a week and a half ago. He was sacked, so they've been bottom of the division. They've got a couple of British players in there. But you're right, Europeans do like linking up. There is a model there that can be used and could actually benefit, perhaps. But I think if there was simply a financial revenue stream to help and support football with the amount of money that's in there, you don't necessarily need the financial impetus. You could have governance. You could have, let's say, look like a national football bank, let's say, where billions of pounds are poured in through all the different streams of revenue, and then that's distributed equally or distributed depending on where you are in football, amongst football clubs, to get stadium up to scratch, get pitches up to the quality that they should be. And all that can ever do is actually benefit and promote football and make footballers better. Because, you know, football pitches in the lower leagues, some are fantastic, some are absolutely dreadful. And, you know, the amount of clubs that have lost out on being promoted because they haven't got 500 seats in the ground, where they only actually normally get 300 people watching them anyway. But they need 500 seats. And all these little things, you know, clubs could actually, it could all be invested in the football clubs. And as we've always talked on this show, football and community go hand in hand. I mean, you know, I live now in Belgium and my community club is doing a lot in the area. It's very local. It's very affordable. If we win tomorrow, then we are secured a playoff place within the Europa stage. So hopefully we could maybe get a Europa place if we go any further. It's €5 to watch games when it's in the cup, and it's €10 to watch games, you know, in the league, which is, I think, and this is a professional club, full-time professional footballers, but the community is involved, the price is involved. The manager was in the bar talking to supporters the other day. You know, it has its trials and tribulations as a league as well. There's a lot of things going on at the moment in Belgian football, but equally, there is a community. And the players respect that and understand that. I mean, I know something is simple. I mean, I know Jurgen Klopp does it because he comes from Germany. But all the players and all these standards, they spend time after the game for 5 or 10 minutes with supporters, singing songs with them, you know, and thanking them for the fact that they're being paid to do something that they love, and we're actually helping paying them with our entrance fee so they can play and enjoy football. So there's a lot that can be done, but I think we need many, 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 many changes in the game. And if we can get those changes, then perhaps we can move forward. But it's a capital.
Yeah, you've already created a long list. I've been writing some of these down for my meeting with the FA in the coming weeks. And we've got plenty of stuff we want to throw at the FA. But as you say, it doesn't necessarily mean lots of money. It's just that support network. So maybe that's something that we can work at. Ironically, the non-league game seems to embrace and look after itself and look after their own. And we just need that wider umbrella from the higher echelons.
I think you're right, but I think also there's many things the FA need to look at and address. I think look at the professionalism of the of non-league football or semi-professional football. Do we have too many teams that actually are professional and full-time? Is that a level playing field? How can you improve upon that? Players' wages, salary caps. Can we improve stadia? Can we make sure that the experience going to football is one that is fully inclusive, rather than having just occasionally, you know, once a season, you know, a couple of campaigns to highlight issues? And the FA have got a big, big job to do. But equally, I believe government has an important place to play in this as well. And we can legislate and we can get things in place to make the game more accessible, more affordable, better quality. And we should be taking that money that is in the Premier League, the billions and billions of pounds, which is played off by, obviously, television money, which equally includes subscribers to that, because without the subscribers, there's no point in television, televised football. And for those people that go through the turnstiles, we've already seen turnstile revenue. The Premier League clubs don't need it. Well, wouldn't that be a good start? Imagine Manchester United divvying up, and Manchester City divvying up all their revenue from gate receipts for a season to, let's say, the 25 semi-professional clubs in Greater Manchester. That would actually, basically, pay money for the next 10 or 15 to 20, maybe 30, or in some cases 50 years for a football club. And if they don't need the revenue because they get so much money in television revenue, perhaps, as you say, this is something that they can do financially. Because I think once a club becomes sustainably financially stable, and we put special measures in place to make sure clubs can't overspend and they can't go out and buy a player and pay stupid money for him, and we get the right balance in, then football is going to be in a healthier state. And if we don't do that, we're going to continue with this bust and boom situation where football clubs are in the top flight, then lower division, then they go bust, and then a new chairman comes in. And I know we're talking about that this evening. So, these are the kind of things that, football needs to change in the methodology. It's not all about being in the very top flight. Cut your cloth accordingly, work within what you've got, and be successful at the level you are.
And you've teed up our next two guests perfectly. Now, we discussed most weeks with Alex Neary and Matt Badcock of the Non-League Paper about the competition at the top of the National League this season, being one of the most open for years. Now, next guest is enjoying his first spell in non-league football as a manager, a high-profile role, but he's all about the football and not the celebrity exposure. However, I'm pleased to say that he does finally join us here on the Non-League Football Show. And good evening, manager at Salford City, Graham Alexander.
Good evening.
Now, let's start with your appointment in May, which came somewhat out of the blue for most of us. You've over 1,000 playing appearances as a pro, a fairly decent start as a manager in the Football League, but then you drop into non-league to become manager at Salford City. How did it all come about?
It was a bit out of the blue for me as well, I'll be honest. I got a phone call from Chris Casper, sporting director at Salford, just asking to speak with me and meet me and meet Gary Neville. So, it took a bit of convincing, to be honest, because it wasn't something I'd considered or anything. But I felt that I needed to speak to them, and I did so. And to be fair, the ambition that they talked about, the sort of recent history of the club, what they'd done, all that sort of stuff. It was it sounded really exciting, what they wanted to do next. But it still took another couple of meetings for me to really feel, that I would suit the club and the job, and it was something I wanted to do. But and in the end, I just felt that it was a good opportunity to go for it. So that's what I did. So that's how it all started, really.
And you sound like you're enjoying it as well.
Yeah, it's been really good, because I sort of tried to come into it with my eyes wide open about the issues we might have, because the club's only been full-time for a year as well, so there was a lot of that needed sort of improving if we could, but there was good things that were already in place, of course, and obviously the team had been winning for a few years as well, so there was a lot of good things in place, but there was other things that obviously needed to come up to full-time and professional standards. And so we've spent quite a bit of time trying to do that, but we're getting a lot of support from the club. They want us to improve as much as possible behind the scenes, but obviously the number one factor is winning on the pitch. So we've been in a bit of a difficult patch for the last few weeks, but overall it's our first season at this level. I feel we're in a good position to compete, at the business end of the season.
Yeah, and when you were appointed, you got in a 4-year deal. So what was the dream? What was the target that you were sold?
That was just to progress, really. Try and continue the upward trajectory of what the club has done in the last 3 or 4 years. We know the difficulties that they will entail, trying to do that. Nothing is guaranteed to be successful. We have to put a lot of hard work into it, but we also understand that we don't hide away from the fact that we've got a good budget, and the club put a lot of money into the infrastructure and the playing squad. So there's that to contend with, but it's always good to work with good players. We want to try and progress through the leagues if possible. We haven't got a time scale on an exact sort of end point with the plan. It's just to continue to improve every aspect of the club if we can, and obviously if you're improving as a club, that means improving results and you're standing in the game. So It's a difficult step. You know, there's only one automatic position, promotion position. So we know it's going to be a difficult task.
Yeah, and obviously not quite a full year in the job at the moment. But yeah, what shocks you most, and what's pleased you most of the game at non-league level?
I think I wouldn't say what shocked me. I think, like I said, I tried to come in with my eyes wide open. You know, some of the facilities around are obviously not up to the same sort of standard in the Football League, but that's completely understandable because the finances are not there. You know, a lot of teams have been come through the league in part time, so that's something that me personally had to get used to, and plus some of our players, because some of our players in our squad have come from a good level as well, you know, a league level, I should say. So, but what's pleased me is the competitive level of it, and there's lots of good players, lots of good teams, there's lots of good managers, so it's. You know, it's a proper competition. I think, I think this is the first year that Salford has been on a nationwide sort of level. You know what I mean? It's always been the sort of northern-based league that they've been in, and a lot of part-time clubs. But, you know, this level, the majority are full-time with ex-professionals, you know, ex-league professionals playing for them, managing them and all that sort of stuff. So it's a real... competitive level, and you know, like I said, we play some good games. It's been some difficult games, but really enjoy the experience. And it's about the daily working life and having the chance to be better and win and improve. And we have all those sort of opportunities.
Swampy,
great, man. Obviously, as a football club, I've been Salford City. I'm from Manchester. I've known the club a long time. FC United have played against them on many occasions. But obviously, a five year rise to where they are now. You know, starting off with about 50 to 100 supporters on average. Now, you know, getting good crowds. Do you feel any more pressure on yourself now as you're at a football club that I've got high expectations and. I know from a perspective like Bernard and John, or the previous managers that were there before that, Phil Power and Dave Chadwick, they all did very, very well, but did well to a point where the management decided that it was time to move on to someone else. Now, you've had a four-year deal, but do you feel actually any pressure?
Not really. I think the pressure comes from within, and you can ask any football manager at any level, they want to win. They need to win. It's irrelevant what club you're at. The game is about winning. It's competition. There's a lot of volatility in professional football now, and certainly in the management role. So I think any manager coming into any role has got his eyes open to what the situation is. I think the pressure to be successful, to win, is one of the major reasons that I came here. I think if the ambition would have been to finish mid-table, consolidate, be in non-league, you know, in the National League for the next 3 or 4 years, then there's no way I'd have come to the club anyway. So, you know, the expectancy was to try and win, and that's what I've bought into. So, but, you know, there's a lot of hard work that has to go through on a daily basis, which is what I try to focus on, and then try to help the players as much as we can, structure them in a way where it gets the best out of their abilities, and see where it takes us. But I think any manager would be you talk to is under pressure to win games and at any level. So this job is no different.
Well, I mean, and on that as well, I mean, you know, you look at the teams now in the National League, you look at the teams in the National League North and indeed South, and the professionalism of football now is a situation where nigh on every club in your division, four or five in the league below, are full-time professional. And what advice would you give to any club that is semi-pro, training on a Tuesday and a Thursday? How can they compete against the likes of the Salford Cities of this world, the Leighton Orients, the Fylds, and you know, and Harrogate Town, who've got big budgets, and are full time. Is there anything we can do to keep up with them?
Yeah, I think there is. I haven't got experience of part time football, so I can only imagine the difficulty it is for managers to structure their team and prepare them in the best way possible going up against the full time club. So, every credit to them. But I think the game is about players, and if you get your recruitment right, it's about belief. So if you get a good team spirit, it's having a structure, having some of the players believe in. And I do think that you can instill some of these things on a part-time basis. And it also comes down to the discipline and the dedication of your players. Even though they might only train on a Tuesday and Thursday and play on Saturday, there's nothing to stop them from preparing for games in the right way and to do extra sessions themselves, which even as a full-time player, you can do that as well. So I think you can do that at any level. So it's about getting the right people in, I think, and trying to give them something to believe in. And I think there's lots of good clubs there, but they're in part-time at the moment, and I understand why they can't go full-time. But the way the game is in England now, I think it's the competitive level that drops through the divisions is fantastic, which can't be matched by any other country in the world. And,
I totally agree. I mean, I watch over here a team in League 1B, which is basically a full-time professional division. Your Europa League football is available to us. And the standard, in fairness, is on a par with National League North, National League, and maybe the League 2. And you see that professionalism in UK sport now, and certainly in the football side of things. But just my final question would be, and it's one that you don't have to answer, but again, it's my duty to suppose to ask these questions, is if it's not Salford this season, who do you think realistically has the credentials and are best prepared to go into the Football League? And I say, you don't have to answer that if you don't want to, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
No, listen, it's a fair question. I think we are going all out to be successful. So, obviously, I can't talk about our own club, but the obvious ones are the big clubs at the top that are up there that are ex-league clubs, your Leighton Orient, your Wrexhams. But looking at the other teams up there, Harrogate, Solihull Moors, there's some real good teams there. We've played against everyone now, and we haven't found any easy games. Certainly not against the top 10, top 12 clubs. And I've been really impressed with the sort of the organisation, the fitness levels, the actual talent that's on show in the National League. So I think the experience and the sort of the infrastructure at those ex-league clubs lend themselves to being probably the most prepared. But the game is about being successful on the pitch and with the right players. And we feel that we've got a group as strong as anyone's to challenge. So that's what our target is.
You mentioned, it's not the best week. It's great that you've come on to speak to us. And I feel guilty now that you're coming on a week when things aren't quite going to plan. But knocked out of the FA Trophy midweek and replay to Mason. Is that maybe, with it being so tight up the top there, is that maybe a blessing in disguise so you can concentrate more on the league?
I don't know. You only tell at the end of the season. we played quite a young team the other night, which we had, to be fair, we had done in all the previous rounds, mixed with some senior players. But we didn't do that as much the other night because we just had a long trip to Braintree on the Saturday. It was down to Mason on the Tuesday. We got another big game on Saturday, and we just felt it was better to sort of look after the real seniors who were going to play. And we played some young players, but we put out a team that we wanted to compete with. And it's always disappointing to lose games, but we were realistic about our potential to win that game on Tuesday. But we're out of it, unfortunately, but we have to concentrate on what's in front of us, and that's the league. So, but going out is no guarantee of any success anywhere else. We just want to try and keep that winning mentality throughout the club in every game we play. But, we have to go full strength on every game from now to the end of the season to hopefully have a chance of being successful.
You mentioned a lot about players and that, and I said at the top of the interview about the media profile that Salford's got, and you're not shy on the media side of things. You've had plenty of experience in your pro career, international career, and that sort of things. But does that maybe affect the sort of players that you're thinking of bringing in on recruitment side of things? Do they need to be a certain sort of person? Because it might become a bit of a goldfish bowl at Salford if you're not careful as a young player.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good points about that as well. Because as a footballer, you want to be under a bit of pressure, and you get a bit of pressure if you want to win and you want to be successful, you're going to get the spotlight on you. And the game now, the modern game, and the modern young player is used to social media, the spotlight on the game. They've been brought up with Sky TV, the Premier League, all that sort of stuff since they were kids. So I think there's a sort of understanding of how the game works now, especially from the younger players. But I think it's just important that they keep the focus on their football and not on the profile, not on the sort of, the media side of it. It's about being a good footballer and being a good professional and getting the things out of the game that you thought about as a young kid, and that's about the glory of playing, the glory of winning. It's not about the other side of it. So for a young player, I think Salford's a great club to join, because we've got a strong sort of ambition to bring players through while being successful. But there is a profile on it, but my take on most of the modern players is they don't mind it. So I don't think it's a problem for us, especially if it's handled in the right way. I think every team that gets media highlights and profiles, there's always good and bad on that side of it. But I think most people treat us pretty fairly. And I think when they see the actual work going on behind the scenes, and if you experience a match day at our stadium on a Saturday and on a Tuesday, you get a good welcome, you're looked after well. It's very fan-friendly at our match days, and the club makes sure that's the case. So there's lots of good things for the supporters and the players to experience at Salford.
Swamps.
Yeah, well. I was just about to say, I know, Kieran Glynn left FC United of Manchester and signed a contract with Salford. And again, he's one of those young players that perhaps with full-time football and under guidance of yourself and the stewardship of yourself and Chris Casper and a few others may well become, a 13 player. And at the moment, you're probably using him in sparingly in the right way, because it's a very tough league. My final question is just really, with the relationship of the players like now Beckham's involved, and well, the likes of Scholes, who's now got to Oldham Athletic, and Nicky Butt and both Nevilles, do they in any way have any input into sort of like the day-to-day coaching side? I mean, I know they're having the passion of helped out, which again, you've got a huge amount of experience and the previous managers not so much, but do you occasionally rely on their expertise, and or are they just letting you to run that side of football now, and it's just your responsibility?
Yeah, no, they're really clear. To be fair, the main contact I have with the owners is through Gary Neville. Constantly in contact, week in, week out. But they're really clear from the start. Gary was especially clear from the start that I was brought here to manage the team and manage the football side of it. They never impact on the training, the picking of the side, any of the football matters. They're generally interested. They're great supporters, and Gary being the main contact and the main driver week in, week out, I talked to him on all the football matters. I had a meeting with him this afternoon, but he's never trying to imprint his view on who should be picked or who shouldn't be. I was brought here for a reason because of what I've done in the past and my experience as a manager, and he's allowing me to be the manager, and it's a great, you ask any football manager, that's a great scenario to be in. So it's exactly the sort of working environment that I'd expect at a club like this, with the people involved, and I just want to repay the faith that they've shown in me.
Well, it sounds like the perfect relationship, really, and it's been great talking to you, Graham, because as you said, there's a lot of certainly on social media, there's a lot of stuff spoken about clubs, and a lot of the time it's green-eyed monster. And actually, to speak to you and hear how well, just organised and focused you are on just concentrating on the football, it's such a refreshing thing to hear, because sometimes we have people on this show and it's all about the puff and the fluff and everything else they can tell us, and you've probably got more of that around you than anybody else, but it's just nice talking to a manager that just wants to talk about football, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you well for the rest of the season and hopefully get you back on the show very soon.
Yeah, no, that'd be a pleasure. It's great to speak to you as well. So anytime, and hopefully it'll be soon.
I was just thinking there, Tim, in fairness, I don't think Gray would actually want to be speaking to us again, would he?
He won't want to be speaking to us again.
Well, no, because if he does, that means he's never been promoted.
Well, we'd have him on for the celebration party. Maybe we'll get him to your Belgian pub.
Well, but yeah, quite possibly. In fact, the beer I'm drinking tonight is actually a Lithuanian beetroot sour, and it actually is made with real beetroots, and it tastes of beetroots. It's quite incredible. But Graham and everyone else is welcome over here anytime. But as you say, it's a tough job. It's a really tough job, because there's a lot that goes with it, and it seems that he at the moment is being allowed to manage the team, and all the circus around it is not deflected away from the football.
Well, it's nice also to hear that he's actually only got one point of contact, because, you know, that would always be a concern. You know, I've seen that so many other clubs where, you know, everybody that's got a similar input into the financial input into a club, quite rightly, want to have their say. But you as a manager, the last thing you need is everybody in your ear, particularly after a game, and just to have that one point of contact makes sense. It sounds like they are running it in a sensible way.
Well, look, they're ex-professional footballers of the highest calibre. They're multi-millionaires. They're very prudent. They're very shrewd. They know and understand the game. As you say, they've come through primarily the Premier League years, with a notable exception, maybe a couple of Football League games before it became the Premier League. But they know what they're doing. I mean, Gary Neville's a businessman. You know, he's a property person. I don't necessarily buy into the way the club is not necessarily funded or run, but it still has things for me that I'm not easily unhappy with. But at the same token, I can understand. I mean, Salford. I mean, my father would tell you Salford is one of the few cities in this country that doesn't have a professional football club. And as an Irish Salfordian, he's desperate for Salford to become a league football club. And for others, yes, perhaps it's a green-eyed monster to a degree, but equally, you know, we're talking about the way football is, and I think that really epitomises the amount of money that's within Salford. I'm not saying that they're the biggest spenders or the least spenders, but there's so much money at that football club, they could really do whatever they wanted to do with the football club, and I think they are being slightly more careful in their approach. I mean, this season they brought in, like, Wayne Rooney's brother from Scotland, and you know, there's been talk about, you know, very high wages there. That's for them to do. But they're having to take, I think, a slower approach in a way, because the profile of the club has to be protected. And moving forward, if it was all done in one quick block, right, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to get there, get rid of all the infrastructure, start again. But as I say, it's they're a club that people either love or don't like. It's one of those, there's nothing in between.
I've got the same feeling about myself, but hopefully we'll come back to Salford City later on in the season, but it is very tight at the top of the table. Now, we've just spoken to Salford City, and the contrast of non-league football couldn't be starker than with our next guest. Back in October, we spoke with the then boss at Nuneaton Borough, Nicky Eden, about the issues there with a lack of chairman, mounting debts and threats of even shutouts at the ground, now owned by Norman Smurthwaite, the owner of Port Vale. Then, on the 2nd of November, came a new white knight, Nick Hawkins, who came in as chairman, slashed some of the leaks in the club's budget, appointed Lee Fowler as manager, but his tenure was short-lived, and former Bar well boss Jimmy Ginnelly was appointed to steady the on-the-field stuff. And this week we then saw a statement to say Hawkins has taken the club as far as possible and was leaving the club, handing his shares in trust to Jimmy to hold until new investors could be found. That's complicated even for die-hard fans to understand, but hopefully Jimmy Ginnelly joining us on the line can shed some light. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, very, very tricky position we're in at Nuneaton at the moment.
Yeah, was that a fair reflection of events? Because it's complicated, isn't it? But basically, at the moment, your manager, chairman, and everything, I think, at the club. There's some great people there as well helping you out. But it's not easy being a manager. Not easy being a manager that's also trying to do the chairmanship as well at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Nick Hawkins came to see me and asked me to leave Barwell and become the manager in Nuneaton Borough, which was, in everyone's eyes, they always say, I've been a non-league manager now for about 20 years with Atherston, Bedworth, Shepshed, Barwell. I'm an Nuneaton Borough fan, live right by the ground. My business is right by the ground. He promised me an half-decent deal. So I slept on it and thought, well, if I can go and try and do my best to help Nuneaton out and help Nick out, I'm a man that works very, very hard for the club that I'm at. And I've landed and we've done everything we can. Nick's been fantastic while he's been here. He's tried his hardest to get sponsors in on board. But I think Nick admitted defeat the other week when he couldn't get anybody in. He said, I'm a lad from Nottingham. I've tried everything I can. He's put his few quid in to try and help the club. And we want to thank him for that. But I'm quite good with sponsors and get people to back me at football clubs I'm at, Tim. And I think Nick thought they were all going to come. But when it's a guy from Nottingham, they're sort of like tentative whether to get involved in it. And Nick firmly believes that if he stepped to one side and just asked me to be temporary chairman or acting chairman for the near future, that the people would come on board. And for the last two or three days, I've been speaking to people and I'm having meeting on top of meeting with potential backers. I don't want to say too much at the minute, but it looks quite promising that the people, there's a lot of promises anyway, that people are going to come and join me at the club now.
Yeah, well, that's great news because, you know, as you said, what Nick's done, quite often we report about chairman coming into clubs and then disappearing and then having massive loans. Now, as far as I understand it, Nick's going to leave the club, there'll be no debt owed to him, which is, you know, quite unlike most chairmen normally leave with a loan, a director's loan or something like that. But it's got too much for him. He just can't make the right connections. But can the club survive even to the end of the season with new investors?
We don't know. We've had we have the bailiffs at the door regular. The club promised to pay a few bills to the HM Revenue and a few other people that they owe money to. We actually didn't pay the bills because we hadn't got the revenue coming in. So it just went from month to month and the bailiffs. In the end, I think for any one man, which was Nick Hawkins, I think Nick just thought, I can't do it because it's not coming in. The finances are not coming in as quick as the poor fella thought. So we don't know whether we can survive. I've got a meeting tomorrow with four or five potential investors that if I can get it across the line, Tim, my plan is to pay the HM revenue as quick as I can, pay the other bill that's causing us a problem. Obviously, with these bills, we've got the embargo. Must be great, actually, for you to have a Salford City on, and then you know you've got Nuneaton Borough. You're dead right in what you said. It's absolutely.
It's great. Hot. It's great, and it's grating as well. You know, it's because no one likes to be in the position that you're in, and you know from your point of view as well. You know, your track record as a manager, you're used to, you know, at Barwell, at Atherston Town. You're used to stability and success, and you're probably as far away from that as you ever could be at the moment.
That's true, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't say Barwell because it's a very well-run club by the people there. But certainly at Atherston, when I went to Atherston, it was sort of like defunct and run down. And you know, we had to sort of like do absolutely everything from painting to getting the first player through the door to get the first investor in. And we had five or six fantastic years, and they're the good times. And then I've had five or six, probably 8 years at Barwell, fantastic times. You know, and then here I am. If I can replicate what I did at Atherston, that's what my heart's telling me. Can I do it again, although I'm getting older? Can I do it again? So I'm going to give it my best shot for sure. I don't know whether it's too deep, whether we can get in time to save it, or we will go into administration or even liquidation. I don't know. But here we are. We're on the grass. We've got 14 lads training. We're preparing for sort of like an absolute monster game, spending more at home. It won't be through lack of effort in every department that I'll sort of like fail on. It'll be because the HM Revenue or someone winds us up.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a great thing. You're still managing to get sides out and get players to play for you. When Nick Hawkins came in, the club was in the 21st in the National North. You're now 22nd. You're 16 points adrift of safety. Yeah. It's a bit, you know, he has managed to steady the ship and maybe fill some of those holes. And, you know, you sound a lot more positive than I feared you might be. So that's a good thing. It sounds like the club's going in the right direction. But is it difficult? You've got to put your manager's head on. You've got to think, well, I need a side to compete against Spennymoor, who have, you know, going well in the division at the moment. But you've also, I guess, you've got to be thinking ahead for next season when, you know, relegation is probably on the cards and how you then set your stall out for that for next season. But you still don't know if you're going to make it through to the end of the season with your chairman's hat on. It's complicated.
It is. I'm a positive guy, very well known around the area. I've got a lot of contacts in football. We've got four or five lads playing for nothing at the minute. We've had kids from Crewe, Doncaster, Port Vale, Blackpool, you know, Kidderminster. It's all a favour for Jimmy to give me a player. Obviously, they're giving me the 17, 18-year-old lad that needs minutes. I can give him the minutes just to fulfil the fixtures. And unfortunately, that's where we are. When I came in, it was a full-time football club, nine of them. I didn't think it was fair to make the nine be full-time and the other sort of like nine not be full-time. So I'll put it straight back to part-time, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So the changing rooms is very good, Tim. The clubhouse is very good. Training's pretty good. Atmosphere's good. We're just lacking the extra quality player to sort of like pick a result up. But it's saved the club first and the team comes second. And it's the first time I've been in this position in my managerial career. But I do love football that much. I'll try anything.
Well, I did it. I put some feelers out, when you first took over the job, and you know, there was nothing but praise for you. And you know, I was wondering whether I'd see a picture with your underpants on the outside. Yeah, it was even Blue Peter badges mentioned as well.
I know. It's my wife said to me, Michelle, what are you doing? Do you think it's going to be the right thing? I said, I think I've got some serious egg on my face for 4 months. And as you said, we know we're going to go down. We always knew we was going to go down unless the miracle happened. We will regroup very quick for next season if I can get this consortium together. You know, there seems to be a lot of positivity. It's all the same in non-league football, and there's loads of people who come forward when it's actually, say, give me a £5,000, £10,000, £15,000 donation or whatever. They run scared, don't they? So I'm hoping they don't. I'm hoping they all come on board, help me out, help the club out, save the club. It really is a saving and eating borough. Because last week I really felt that it was going to go to the wall. I felt sorry for Nick, he couldn't go any further. And the fella just needed to sort of like walk away with his head held high with what he's done up to this point. And I just said it, I will do everything I can to make it survive.
It's interesting you mentioned your wife. There's a discussion I was having this week about that when you're running a football team, that the team around you is all important. So, you know, Dave Anderson normally talks about the importance of having an assistant manager that's a proper number two for you. You've obviously got coaches, fitness coaches, physios and all that around you. But the most important thing, and particularly with you now playing manager, chairman role, has got to be family and friends as well. Because, you know, at some point, you're probably sobbing in the corner and rocking back and forth, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've got my own little transport company with 10 lads who work for me, and that's pretty busy. So I'm going in at 7 o'clock in the morning, going around there till about 12 o'clock, and then I'm coming around here at 12 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night. I mean, I've got another meeting after training tonight with a possible investor, and that's all I'm doing. I've met people today, long, probably before time. We've just had a 3-hour meeting with a guy that's on about running the academy next year. If we can get over this period, we've got women's team we've got putting in place. We're doing everything that we should do if we survive and get over it. So, you know, I never whinge and moan. I'll just take it on the chin, whatever's coming my way. And hopefully, you know, I've got Dale Belford, the ex-Tamworth manager, helping me out as Stephen's coach, Tom Bates' coach. You just said it, Tim. I'm surrounded by very, very good people that I trust. And the family, my son's down here washing the kit and, you know, doing the changing rooms and everything. So it's what it is. It's what it is.
It's non-league, isn't it? So, as far as I understand it, the suggestion is that if you get immediately 10 investors putting in £10,000 this season and then committing to that for rolling for every season going forward, that the club can survive and move on?
It can survive and will survive if we can get everything that I'm trying to do with the 10. Might be 10, 12, 15, because there's a bit of interest. Now I've actually put it out there on the local radio that this is Jimmy Ginnelly's rallying cry to save the club. I really need the investors. I really need businesses to come on board. I'm desperate for the fans to keep coming through the gate to give us the 12 quid that's massive to us at the moment. We've got a guest speaker on Saturday night with sort of like 5, 6 ex-Coventry City players all doing it for nothing for me. You know, people have donated prizes to that. It really is the last chance for Lunan. I hope I can save it for the people in the league because it's a massive club, great history. And I'm going to put a fans save the fund or whatever you want to call it out there to the fans to see if they can help me out. I've just got to scrimp and scrounge off everybody to see if I can save this massive club.
Mm. Well, it's a great story, but not a great story. Hopefully you'll come up with the end result that you want and that we all want, and it'll be a nice heartwarming town. Now we have these, you know, almost every week on the show, and I always say to people, you know, it's like if Hollywood actually looked at non-league, they'd have a number of blockbusters week in, week out of the story. So, you know, the Jimmy Ginnelly story, saving Nuneaton Borough, it's already got a fantastic history on its own accord. Who would play Jimmy Ginnelly in the film?
That's what I do hope, because football's fickle, isn't it? Fans are fickle. They love the highs and they hate the lows. And if it's Jimmy Ginnelly that's the man that they shut the door on, I can only promise the people out there that it'll be 100% effort that I've put in, probably more. I'll be brutally honest, Tim, I was awake all night last night. I probably had 2 hours because my mind's working overtime on what I can do next for this club to save it. One thing's for sure, Ian Neil tried to do it on his own. One man can't do it on his own. Nick's tried to do it on his own. Lee Thorne's tried to do it on his own. This level of football is not for one man, and unless you're a very, very wealthy person. And you know, round and Eaton, we've got a few, but we haven't got many millionaires that sort of like love football and just throw money at it. It's a shame, because if we could find that one man, I'd love to have some good times. And I'm sure they will come back, whether it's sort of like next season, season after. I'm sure we've got some good times ahead. So, like I say, I'll take all the paintballs in the face at the minute and just get on with it.
Well, it takes a lot of bottle to do what you're doing, and we all support you. When you have got that fundraising stuff up and running, you know, tag us in on Twitter and we'll help you promote that as well. And, well, anything else we can do for you, Jimmy, just get in touch, because it's been fantastic talking to you.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks, mate.
Now, back in December, we spoke with the manager of my club, Hayden Yelling United, ahead of their tough trip in the FA Trophy to holders Brackley Town. Despite their excellent record of dumping clubs from higher divisions out of the cups this season, Brackley were just a step too far considering a late goal and losing 4-2. However, it didn't derail their league form, and Paul Hughes sits alongside me this week with his club and mine, the only one still with a 100% win record in home league games across the top 8 levels of the English pyramid. That's Premier League down to step 4 of non-league. Welcome back to the show, Paul. That's a record to be proud of across 18 divisions.
Yeah, it's a great record. Again, you're always reminding me of this, so you're the stats man. And we're very proud of that, and long may it continue.
Yeah, not only the home win record, which is a powerful, you know, psychological weapon, I guess, when visiting teams are coming, but it's also across those same 18 divisions, Hazen Yelling top scorers in league football with 98 goals from 25 matches. Even more impressive when you consider your lost club record scorer, Manny Duku, in pre-season to Cheltenham Town.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were concerned when we sold him because of his goal return last year, which is impressive. I think it was 39, wasn't it? Yeah, so that everyone thinks you lose 39 goals from your team, that you'll struggle. That's just how people think. Little did they look at our goal scoring record that a lot of our goals came from midfield, which is the same thing that's happened this year. So we weren't that shocked that we've scored. Well, we didn't think we scored this many, but we're not that shocked that we've scored a lot of goals. And there's always someone that steps up to the plate. I mean, this year it's been Lee Barney. But, you know, we are a very attacking team. You know how we set up, and we do go for the jugular most games. And we do create a lot of chances. So whoever finds themselves in that centre forward spot tends to get a lot of chances. And and like you said, this year Barney's been capitalising on that.
Yeah, and some impressive displays football wise this season. The team just clicking at times. What's been that magic ingredient?
I just think that managers set the climate. And I think that they create the environment is what I mean by that. And I think that we've got an environment that's conducive to self-expression. I think we've got an environment that's conducive to fairness and an environment that's conducive to hard work. Everyone gets treated fairly. There's no one gets special treatment. It doesn't matter who you are, the youth team player coming in or one of the experienced players. And I think that type of environment... it just creates the right vibe. And I think that's what we have here. And it's taken a long time to come, as you know, because to get that right blend takes time. And managers need time, which is not often what they get. To create that right environment, it takes time to sort of get the right soil, so to speak. Can't be done in 3 months. I feel for managers that don't get given that amount of time. I really do. To get things right, but I think we've been given that time and we're now reaping the rewards of that.
Yeah, and it's often spoken about that success comes from bouncing back from the knockbacks that you've got, and obviously the club's had successive relegations and then missing out on the playoffs last year. Did that sort of give the players and yourself extra incentive this season?
I think it allowed us to keep the core group together, although obviously since then we've improved it a lot. I was disappointed on the day, obviously, because we'd beaten Cambridge twice that year. We're at home. We had a great home record. We had a great goal-scoring record, and we couldn't hit the back of the net that day. Now I've looked at it, I think that it's actually a blessing because it gave us a good, solid year to get a really strong team together at a level where you probably can get away with experimenting it a bit more. And we needed that time to experiment. We needed that time to get the right blend. And we've done that. And like I said, long may it continue. Let's try and get over the line and get this promotion that we all want. And then let's see where that momentum takes us.
Yeah, 15 points clear at the top of the Ispian South Central, albeit now a game more than the other top five. You caught up and overtaken. 13 games to play, but that includes at least one game against each of the top seven, with the exception of Chesson. You beat 1-0 at the weekend. It's not easy, but it's in your hands.
Yeah, we've played those top sides. We've played them all away from home. But they've got to come to our place. That's a totally different story. You know what our record's like at home. It's a lovely pitch. It's conducive to good football. It's nice and wide. We really do stretch teams. And it's a tough ask for them to come to us and beat us. And if they do, great. We'll shake their hand. We'll have learned something from the day. And we'll continue to improve. But they've got to do that first. And those games, we've proven we can beat them. We've proven we can compete with anyone at this level of football. We've proven that we compete with most teams at step three. You know, we've even given Brackley Town a good game in step two. So we're not frightened of anyone. And like I said, if anyone comes here and teaches us a lesson, then we'll accept that. And we'll go away and we'll work on what we need to work on. And that's our philosophy.
Yeah, and injuries and suspensions obviously kicking in now at this time of the season, as for everybody. But that means new arrivals, promotion of under-23s, youth team players. With the certain way that you play, does that make it difficult to bring people in immediately so that they gel?
Our under-23s, you mean?
Yeah, well, bringing in new players into a system where you are slightly different from the norm at this level.
Mm. Yeah, good question. I've not really thought too much about that. The lads that we have brought in, we do a lot of shape work, as you know. We spend, one session a week for at least 20, 25 minutes, maybe half an hour on shape. So whoever comes in gets to know the shape very quick and gets to know what their responsibilities are off the ball and on the ball. So I think that, that should be enough for them to understand what we want. And I think that's how we've got through it so far. Yeah, because it is a different style of play, right?
And 2.5 months to go before the end of the season, still a tough run in. But do you have to be thinking about pre-season and next season already so you hit the ground running in August?
That's how I think. everyone thinks the same way. But you've got to look at where you potentially can be. I think all managers do that. And if we are going to make that step up next year, you've got to start thinking about that as well. But it's on the back of your head because you just want to get the job done this year. But it is in the back of your head to start moulding a team for next season. And that's what I'm thinking about now. And I'm certainly the players that I'm looking at are with that in mind. So if we are successful in bringing those players in, it will be with the next season in mind. Yeah.
And it's been a running theme throughout this week's show, the work-life balance debate. It's, 9:30 now on a Thursday evening. Being a football manager at non-league level, it's not easy, is it? It's like nothing else.
Yeah, and it's Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day. You're sat in a studio in Hayes, 9:30 on it, an evening with me. Yeah.
That's why we had a limited amount of numbers today. No, we didn't. We had a full house. But it is all-consuming, and I think that non-league managers don't really get the fair credit they deserve for the amount of time, effort, emotion, energy they put into the job for what they get in return. It's a thankless job most of the time. And that's just, I think, what we enter into. I think we all know that. It shouldn't be like that, but it seems to be that way. We're sort of a glutton for punishment sometimes, you know. Speaking to Gary McCann at the Hampton game, we sort of had a giggle about, you know, why do we do this sometimes, you know. But I think it's for the love of the game. I think it's the passion, and I think it's the joy you get when you get a team working well. But there are a lot of sacrifices. And like you mentioned, I know earlier on about Breno, he's a good friend of mine. You do get a lot of slaps in the face. And I think that, you know, football, it seems to be that way. So you've got to be quite thick-skinned, and you've got to just believe in yourself and believe in the way you want to play and stick with that. And also Lee Dynan. I spoke to Lee Dynan, you know, the other week. So, it's tough, but we all love football, and I think that's why we do it.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to do anything else, would we? Well, Paul, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Wish you well for the rest of the season. Well, I certainly do, because it makes it a lot easier in my role. But hopefully we'll have you on before the end of the season again.
Cheers, Tim.
Well, time to head back on down to Non-League Paper Towers. And Alex Neary, editor of the Non-League Paper, joins us this evening. Good evening, Alex.
Hi, Tim. How you doing?
I'm good. Another busy week in Non-League. Middle of February. We're reaching the new one of the season. I'm glad I could say that and not have to spell it, because that was always a... Where do those accents go in those sort of words? But we've had the FA Trophy replays this week and some interesting results there.
Yeah, there was. I suppose everybody's looking at Maidstone seeing off Salford 3-0. I'm not sure how surprised I was about that. I suppose I was surprised in the respect that I felt Salford have a big enough squad and big enough resources to draw on to go for a day out at Wembley. And I suppose the objective at Salford is to get into the Football League. The FA Trophy is not high on the priority of the ownership, I'm sure. But at the heart of Salford Football Club, the non-league heart, I'm sure that there would have been a lot of people, a lot of the kind of die-hard purist fans that would have been really looking forward to a day at Wembley in the FA Trophy final. But it's not to be. They lost 3-0 to Maidstone, and pretty convincing display, I have to say. And I think it's just... It's a sign of what Mason have got there. Actually, I think they're a pretty strong side, and they're not in a false position in the league, because they are where they are. But on their day, they've got enough manpower and firepower to dismantle the best of teams. So I suppose that was a surprise to some people, not so much to me. And of course, Barnett saw off Carl Schultz and Fylde put Rami to bed after that 5-5 epic draw last week. So yeah, it's a couple of results were probably expected, home results in favour of National League teams and Maidstone seeing off Salford. So a very good week for the trophy.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about Salford. We just had Graham Alexander on the show, but as you say, then they're not going to get a chance to play at Wembley if they make the Football League. You know, they're not going to make the FA Cup final for several years, however successful they're going to be. So if they are looking to go up this year, then maybe this was their only year to make it to a Wembley final. It just seems that, as you say, they've got the resources. You would have thought that it might have been something that they'd want to push for.
Well, they're not pulling in huge gates. I mean, they're pulling in bigger gates than they were, and they are growing as a football club in that respect. So they're getting more people through the gates. But the majority of people that go and see Salford still on a Saturday afternoon are non-league fans, would have followed Salford for quite a few years. And so the trophy and a day out at Wembley would have meant an awful lot to them. And what a way, and I'm talking, if they were to gain promotion this league and this season and meet their objective, what a fantastic way to leave non-league football than by getting to the FA Trophy final and giving their fans, their loyal fans who've seen them slugging away in the depths of Step 4, they've got the free ticket out of the National League into the Football League. But what a day out that would be to sign off and say goodbye, and a day out at Wembley would have been fantastic. So I'm a little bit surprised in that respect that they didn't, roll their sleeves up and go for it. Listen, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did go for it, but at the end of the day, this is the National League. They came up against Maidstone, who probably just blew very hot on that evening and did a job on them. So I'm pretty sure Salford faithful, Salford supporters will be bitterly disappointed, as will Graham Alexander, serial winner there, a guy who wants to win at all costs. So, they'll be disappointed, but good on Maidstone and good luck to them in the next round.
And you say about, they're looking to go up this year, and we've spoken about them, maybe being the ones that you fancy doing it if it came to the shout. And then we've got, you look at the table, and if you didn't know the track record of these clubs, Solihull Moors, 2 points clear at the top of the table. You want to fancy them, wouldn't you?
Well, you would. I mean, I'll come to Solihull Moors very quickly. I still fancy Salford. If I'm sitting here now and you're giving me £10 of someone else's money, it's not going to be my own money. It has to be someone else's money to bet on. I'm still putting that money on Salford. I just think that I look at that squad and I look at what they can do on a day at their best. There's back-to-back wins in early January against Wrexham and that 3-0 hammering of Leighton Orient on the road. I just think they have got so much quality and I think that they can hit a sixth gear. So I still think that's where my money's staying in my pocket, but someone else's money should go on them. But Solihull Moors, I've been saying it all season, what a fantastic job Tim Flowers has done there. I suppose it's getting a little bit tired now when I keep saying they're defying the critics, because the critics should know now to keep stum. If you look at their side, at that squad, got a big squad as well. I think they've got 26 in the squad. Yes, they've spent some money. There's no arguing with that. But they've spent it really, really well. I don't think there's been a signing that's flopped. If you look at some of the guys that Flowers has brought in, Danny Wright in the summer, Terry Hawkridge recently won the league a couple of years ago with Lincoln. They've just got a blend of youth and experience. Carl Storer came in last season. Nathan Blissett won the league last year with Macclesfield. Alex Goodyear was, I think he was Flowers' first signing from Brackley. So they've just got stacks of talent. They've bought well from lower down in the pyramid, from Step 2. They've recruited really well from the Football League. I think they've got an average age of 24 or 25. They're strong in all areas. So when people keep on saying, oh, crikey, Solihull Moors, this tiny club in Birmingham who are pulling in gates of 500, 600 a week, don't be fooled by that. Look at what they've got there. Look at the quality in the ranks. Fantastic manager. And it would be a wonderful story because a year ago they were still in the bottom four and 4 weeks, Christmas last year, they were rock bottom, looked destined for relegation. Fantastic story. I still think Salford will do it, but I think Solihull Moors are now making it. It's not a two-horse race, and I don't think it's going to be a two-horse race between Salford and Leighton Orient. That's what a lot of people thought it would be, myself included. But I think now
the likes of Solihull will come into it. And the more teams that come into it, brings other teams into it, Wrexham will still have a fighting chance too. So fantastic run-in for the National League to come over the next couple of months.
You mentioned a year being, making a difference, being a manager. Gainsborough Trinity, Lee Sinnott, John Reid, a year ago they came into the job. They're sixth in the Northern Premier, still in the playoffs, all right. They're four off the top five, and they've had a bad run at home, just 2 wins in 11. Sacked this week.
Yeah, I mean they were flying before Christmas. They were chipping away at top spot. Got to say that's a brutal league. They're in the Northern Premier division. It's so tough. You've got the likes of South Shields and Warrington slugging it away at the top. You've got Farsley Celtic there, Scarborough. It's pound for pound, it's really, really strong. Gainsborough are up there and deservedly so. Listen, you win two games at home from 11 games, you're going to struggle, because if you can't keep your home gate happy, then that's when the board start getting a little bit twitchy. And the gate was down considerably from where it had been. So fans were voting on their feet. And this is a side that was playing step two football a couple of seasons ago. They want to get back to where they were. And I think it's just a sign that it's the board have obviously looked at it and said, you know what, we're losing ground here in what is a very, very competitive division. And we, you know, do we stick or twist? Well, we have to make a move, and they've made a move. It's unfortunate, you know, but it's life of a manager in the modern day game, and it doesn't matter what level you're playing at. If you're not bringing in the results, particularly at home, you will pay the price. So yeah, you know, another managerial casualty, but they've obviously made the move to get themselves back up the table. But it's such a competitive division that top of the table game actually coming up this weekend between South Shields and Warrington, and that is actually moving into a kind of a two-horse race. So, yeah, tough call for Mr. Sinnott, but it just opens the door for somebody else, I guess.
And that managerial merry-go-round, if you've got a pedigree, you won't be out of a job very long. Dean Brennan back in management at Kingstonian.
Yeah, and we're pleased for Dean. To be honest with you, I never felt it would work out for him at Billericay, because I don't think it will work out for anybody at that football club at the moment. I wish Harry Wheeler and Jeremy O'Hara all the very best at Billericay at the moment, but I just have this feeling that something will blow up in the end and the wheels will come off and it'll be somebody else will be drafted in to do a better job than those guys. And I always felt that with Dean Brennan, even when he went in there in September. He said all the right things. He was backed up by his chairman and owner, Glenn Tamplin. And it seemed to be all very rosy. He had them playing lovely football. And then, of course, before Christmas, some murmurings began about a potential takeover. They've stripped back the playing decks massively. They lost six or seven of the best players. And I actually spoke to Dean Brennan. The non-league paper did a piece about Billericay before Christmas, which ruffled a few feathers at the club. But I actually spoke to Dean Brennan when I did that piece, and Dean was adamant that he needed to find players who wanted to play for the football club. He needed to strip out the decks and start getting people there for the right reasons, because the playing budget was ridiculously overinflated. So I liked what he said then. I thought he's talked a lot of sense. It didn't work out for him there, but I didn't think it would work out for anybody. And he's a quality manager. He's got a fantastic track record of getting teams promoted and getting results. Always speaks really well. And I think he'll go to Kingstonian and he'll do a good job. I think he will. He'll look at the situation and he'll look at it very, very carefully and realise that it's a fantastic opportunity. Still one of non-league's kind of sleeping giants. You know, the pull of the fan base they have there in Southwest London is fantastic. So a really, really good appointment, and Kingstonian will, and I think Kingstonian and Dean Brennan will be a very good fit.
And as I said at the top of the interview, it's reaching the, I mentioned that word, denouement again of the season. So what can we expect in the non-league paper this weekend?
That's a very, very good question. I'm just trying to think now. Listen, we've got, we're looking ahead to the FA Vars quarterfinals. So we've spoken to the eight remaining clubs that are in the Vars, and we've got a big spread preview on that. We've also done, or we're in the process of doing, a kind of halfway kind of season review. It's not quite halfway, actually. It's more than halfway, but we're looking kind of ahead to the run-in in the National League and National League North and South. So we've done a nice big piece on that, and we've all kind of sat round and done a round table piece and put our views in on our own personal verdicts of who'll win the respective leagues. I've just told you mine, which is Salford, so I've given the game away a little bit. But it's a couple of chunky features and lots of news. Everything that we've discussed on this in this interview, the likes of Brennan and Sinnott and Solihull Moore's hitting top spots. So, as always, stacks to do on a Friday afternoon. We always leave it to the last minute, but it proves to be another busy Friday and a busy weekend.
And always appreciated, Mr. Neary. Thank you for joining us again, and speak to you soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks, mate.
Okay, well, that's it for this week. A big thank you to Swampy for being with me, for standing an extra hour later as well, being European time. Thank you, Swampy.
Yes, it's nearly bedtime for me now.
Bar time. Yeah. And thank you to your colleagues there in the background. I don't know what they were talking about, but they sounded very excited anyway.
They were, and indeed, actually, there were two of them were Flemish and one of them was German. So you got a plethora of languages earlier on.
Well, a big thank you to all of our guests and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non League Show, Swampy at Red Rebel Radio if he ever picks up on his Twitter, and myself at Tim Fuel. Remember, you can of course find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speaker and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.